You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Thanks for listening to the latest Football Digest podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Subscribe now through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from, so you don't miss a single episode.
Hello and welcome to Football Digest. My name is Ned Keaton, and this week I'm joined by John Cross and Andy Dunn to run the rule over the latest from the international window. And chaps, we're going to start today by looking back at England's defeat to Brazil on Saturday night at Wembley. John, put simply, of course, it is only a friendly. There was nothing at stake, no points at stake or anything like that. But it's not exactly ideal preparation, is it, for England going into the Euros? Yes, they had a lot of players out injured, and we're going to come on to that a little bit more later on in the podcast. But a defeat at home is never good, even if it is, you know, not necessarily a free hit, but again, like I said, a friendly, not really much else riding on it. You know, players playing for their places at the Euros this summer, but it's still not ideal for England to suffer defeat going into the tournament, or at least a few months out from it.
No, I do think there's a couple of things at play here. I think that if England had won, and they could have won, but I thought Brazil were largely the better team overall, really, in key areas, if I'm honest. But it was one of those games where it was so tight that I actually thought, well, England could nick a goal here. And, you know, if they'd won 1-0, you know, everyone would have been sort of happy, but, you know, and sort of put you in a good mood. But, you know, then they would have sort of kind of quickly gone on to say that, you know, they didn't actually play that well, you know, were they sort of exposed a little bit. So, you know, those sort of friendly results have to be taken a little bit of context, I guess. And also, I just think when Gareth Southgate set out with these games, he targeted two really top opponents from the world's, you know, absolute elite top five to give a proper test for his vision, for his starting lineup. For the Euro. So what does that actually mean? I think that means he wanted to try out his starting 11 in an ideal world in both games, so that he would have tried the sort of kind of Trent in midfield, for example, you know, sort of solved a few other issues, had another look at kind of whether sort of Foden, Saka and Kane worked nicely with Bellingham behind, those sort of issues. But the reality tells us really that I actually think that even if those players had all been fit and available, would he have really started and played them all in both games? You know, because we're at that stage of the season where I bet his phone's been red hot with messages and phone calls from club managers saying, you know, you've played Stones and Rice 90 minutes. You're not going to do the same again on Tuesday, are you? You know, that sort of thing comes into it. So it's never going to be an easy one. But I do feel as if it has forced us to re-examine Gareth Southgate's record as England manager against the elite. That is the point. I think he wanted to put on these two games to say, look, we can match and beat the world's best, and we're going to do it in the Euros in the summer, and we'll take something from these games and sort of kind of lay down a marker. That was his ideal. And the fact of the matter is, England lost to Brazil. They were missing key players, yes, but it puts Southgate under the microscope again. I guess that's ever thus, you know, that's the life of an England manager, but it does force us to re-examine his sort of kind of record against the elite, and his record as manager isn't that great against the sort of kind of the best teams in the world.
But Andy, in terms of what John said there, is that a sentiment that you agree with, that England still struggle against the elite under Gareth Southgate? And again, that's going to be a big worry, because, you know, you doubt it's going to be such a fortuitous route to any potential final, semi-final even for England this summer at the Euros. Yes, they had to play Germany last time out in Euro 2020, but other than that, it was a fairly... You know, if you could take playing Ukraine in a quarterfinal and Denmark in a semi-final to get to a major tournament, you'd be quite pleased with that. England this time might not get as fortunate with that run potentially, and there's still these big lingering question marks over them against the elite under Gareth Southgate.
Well, exactly. Yes, I do, and it goes all the way back. You know, it goes all the way back to World Cup 2018, when the run there to the semi-final. And arguably, when you say a big team, you know, it was Croatia. Now, no disrespect to Croatia, but that's the team that you really probably would sort of at least 50-50, maybe 60-40 in your favour. And of course, the run to that particular semi-final included, you know, Colombia, Sweden in the quarter-final. It was another fortuitous run. It was a good group to get out of, which, you know, they did. But again, you could argue that they met... You know, two good teams for three matches in that World Cup 2018. They met Belgium twice in the group stage and in the third place playoff, and they met Croatia and they lost all those three games. So yes, there is a convincing argument that they do just fall short. What I thought was significant, and I think if you want a totally 100%. Take everyone's points, including John's, that, you know, you can't really read that much into these games, but he did select these games as like, you know, markers almost. And the fact is, what I think that game on Friday night does, I think it should recalibrate everyone's expectations. This idea that England are favourites for Euro 2024 is absolutely ludicrous. I mean, they shouldn't be. You know, it's a bookmaker's wheeze, basically. It's like, you know, it's why... That's why down the road here from where I live, not far, is the Coates family, and that's why Denise is getting about £250 million a year, because people are betting on football and on these sorts of, like, you know, there's no way that England are favourites. France are worthy favourites for, and as Germany showed on Friday night with their win in France. You know, they are going to be competitive. There's so many nations. So I think Friday's game should recalibrate our expectations, this idea that we should go there and win. We should go there and we should go deep into the tournament. But the idea that we're going there somehow as the best team in the tournament is just not true. Also, again, this is the performance against big teams. I think one thing tactically that Friday night showed, and this will be going into the tournament crucial, of all the elements that that we might discuss from that, is this idea of, in the absence of Calvin Phillips, in the absence of Jordan, I mean, Calvin Phillips through form, Jordan Henderson through fitness, and who knows through, like, you know, how the level of football he's played this year, what's he going to do in that central midfield? Because the fact of the matter is that Brazil, from the very first whistle, without that favoured sort of double pivot that Southgate likes to use, without that, protecting the centre of defence, Brazil went through the middle time and time again. And Maguire and Stones were exposed. The defence was exposed. Walker had to cover on several occasions. I think that's the big thing that he's going to take out of that. When we start talking about if we learn anything, what we learn is, what's he going to do? So is he, for example, which, you know, is he now actually going to think, well, hang on, you know, I know it's a short time scale. I know I've said he's too inexperienced. Is Rice and Manu the answer there? I think it is.
We When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, let's do that then. Let's look at that solution then, potentially. We're always going to keep it more in line with the Belgian preview later on. But seeing as you've mentioned Kobbie Mainoo there, Andy, I think it's probably right to kind of talk about him a little bit more in depth here. And John, the expectation, I think, is that Kobbie Mainoo, correct me if I'm wrong here, I could be very wrong, but the expectation is he's definitely going to get more minutes than he did against Brazil and could well start against Belgium. I mean, you know, there's all this talk around him. We all know how talented he is. We've all seen how good he's been for Manchester United this season. And even Erik ten Hag, you know, was kind of disappointed to lose him for those first couple of months of the campaign through injury. And since he's come back, he's been a real key, vital cog in this Man United side, and he's stepped up well for them. Now that next step up is international level. Is he ready for it? I think we know the answer already, that from club level, at least, we can say that he is ready for that step up. But is Andy right there to suggest that he could be that, you know, I suppose, missing piece in a jigsaw is what I referred to him last week on our Thursday show. But is he that for England? Could he be that, you know, not necessarily difference maker, but give him that option for that double pivot that Southgate clearly favours? And when Henderson and others are kind of struggling with fitness and form and other things, Kobbie Mainoo offers a good alternative in that role. Or maybe even forces his way into a starting 11 for the tournament.
Well, he could be, but I don't think he will be. I think you have to take it into context, in that basically, you know, what is Southgate's preferred formation at the moment? I think it's 4-2-3-1. You know, you've got Rice at the base, and then basically I think against weaker opposition, if you like, I'd like to see him kind of be a little bit more expansive and play a sort of a more forward-looking player alongside Rice, you know, to sort of drive on. I don't know who that might be. That might be Trent. That might be, you know, dare I say it, Phil Foden, you know, whatever. Be attacking. But there are games when you have to be a little bit more cautious, and it's Rice and you know, a more defensive player, more like a Henderson or indeed, dare I say it, a Mainoo sort of thing, really. But let's get this right. Hang on. Mainoo was only promoted to the senior squad last week. Why? It's not because of his performances for Manchester United. It was because Jordan Henderson had a muscle injury, which kept him out on Saturday. Honestly, I promise you, you know, yes, there was a chance here for him to sort of say, you know, do really brilliantly in training and potentially get some minutes in one of the two games, which I think he probably will against Belgium. I certainly hope so. That they're basically, and then sort of stake a claim. But I would say that for a midfield player who's not in the sort of the 10, I think it's slightly different for an 18-year-old. If we're talking about, oh, don't be afraid, we've done it in the past, stick him in. It's a bit different to Bellingham, who's further forward. It's a bit different to Rooney, who was a prodigious talent at his sort of in his time sort of thing. And, you know, I just think it's a little bit different to a Rashford in 2016, for example, who was, you know, a sensation. You're putting a lot more pressure on the kid because he's a deeper line player. That's just football. I just think, you know, that's a slightly different way. But, you know, I must say, when I was writing a piece for Monday's Mirror, I was sort of trying to examine sort of kind of what Southgate got left to solve as part of the puzzle. He's got left-back issue and he's got that, you know, base and midfield alongside Rice. Who plays Rice? I've got to say, Mainoo didn't particularly come into my thinking. You know, I'd like, maybe it would be nice to see him in the squad. And I think it would be great to sort of kind of see him sort of into that squad. But I don't necessarily, I mean, England have really got to roll out the red carpet. Clearly, they want him to tie him down. I don't think they have particular issues, but he is eligible, I think, for Ghana still. And then basically, so they still want to sort of tie him down. I don't think they see it as a particular issue, but they sort of kind of said that in the past. So, you know, so they do want to get him. He's an outrageous talent. He's brilliant. You know, he got a fantastic ovation, didn't he, when he got subbed against Liverpool in that epic FA Cup tie. And he's a brilliant player, but you know, there were a few bits and pieces where defensively he did get exposed. Didn't everyone in that game? It was madcap. But I just think, you know, we've got to be a little bit more careful with a sort of a more defensive-minded player. I think Southgate is brilliant, has championed the players, honestly. It'll become a myth. Oh, he doesn't sort of risk and doesn't take a, you know, sort of a chance on players. Yes, he does. you know, it's just, you know, look at the way he's promoted Bellingham, look at the way he's sort of kind of put his faith in Foden. Has anyone seen the stats on Foden? He plays him every time he's fit and available, you know. And so I do, and when you say about kind of, you know, he's shown at club level, he's ready to step up. Well, so is Ollie Watkins. I think, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong here, but Andy Dunn, my esteemed colleague, has tipped Ollie Watkins to be player of the year. Well, Ollie Watkins is doing brilliant, absolutely fabulous at club level, but is he an international player? I've got to say, whenever he plays for England, he leaves me thinking he's a brilliant Premier League player, but he's just not got that international class, which I happen to think that basically in certain positions is even more prevalent, i.e. deep lying midfield. So I do think we might see Maynou. I think it's more likely, if I'm honest, that in the Euros, if you had that dilemma, it would be Henderson starting with Maynou. And that's just Southgate's mindset. And actually on that one, it would be a gamble, I think, with Maynou.
Andy, just looking at the state of the squad going into the Belgium friendly now, and of course we're aware that, you know, ahead of Brazil, there was no Bukayo Saka, no Harry Kane, Jordan Henderson as well having the injury issues, the fitness issues ahead of that game. More issues added to it as well. Kyle Walker and Harry Maguire both pulling out. That's resulted in James Trafford and others as well. Rico Lewis kind of coming into the squad as well to bolster the squad ahead of this game against Belgium. You know, we were talking earlier on about Gareth Southgate wanting this international window as a kind of, you know, almost looking at that starting 11. You know, I think we're all in agreement here. Knowing Gareth Southgate, he probably knows, you know, 9 of that starting 11 already for that first game against Serbia. And it's just the little areas here and there, as you both said, left back and defensive midfield is probably it. But now he's not going to see that, is he? With all these injuries, he's kind of, you know, not so much robbed of an opportunity, but it's now testing that squad depth and whether or not the depth's there rather than kind of fine-tuning perhaps the final preparations before the big tournament.
Yeah, but also, Ned, don't forget, you know, these international breaks, yes, I agree, but these international breaks are important in the sense that it is a camp as well. You know, and it's interesting to, it'll be interesting to see how players react in the camp. And John Renshaw and Maynou, like, you know, he probably will, you know, good to get him around the camp, see what sort of character he is, because he won't know him. You know, he'll know him from a little bit from the junior teams, but to see how he reacts. I mean, for example, someone who I think has reacted very well in the camp seems to be Anthony Gordon, for example. Now, he didn't have the greatest game. No England player did on Friday night, but he was okay. But also, you can tell how much, you know, and of course, they all embraced it, but somehow he just seemed a good fit. And I think that when Southgate, now, as you say, he knows pretty much the, you know, his starting 11 and probably knows what changes he'd make, you know, during a game. He's probably that methodical. But it's the players, it's choices, you know, it's the choices, the fringe choices, basically, you know, the 3 or 4 places available in the final 23-man squad that he's got to nail down. And they're between players like, you know, like Anthony Gordon, like defensive wise, like, you know, Conte. Look, these are different sort of choices he has to make rather than who's going to start. And I think that's why the international break, the international camp is always important. We talk about these two games, but actually what's important as well, and Southgate puts huge store on this, is the dynamic and the interaction within the camp. So I think that's important. And he will get something out of the games as well. You know, I mean, it's still Wembley, a full house. It's still nerve-wracking for, certainly for players who are inexperienced or are even making their debut. It's, you know, the pressure's on. John mentions Ollie Watkins. Yes, I do think he's an absolute contender for player of the year in terms of the Premier League, the domestic player of the year. But, you know, the pressure's on him. You know, and I felt a little bit sorry for him on Friday because this idea that you are essentially auditioning, you know, you tonight, maybe Ivan Toney against Belgium, you're auditioning for that one position. We all know it. Gareth is only going to take 2 out-and-out strikers, Harry Kane and A.N. Other. And, you know, that pressure to be, you know, basically to try and get one over on Toney and Toney one over on Watkins, you know, is enormous. You're at Wembley, and it's still a full house at Wembley, you know, and it's still Brazil, it's still Belgium on Tuesday evening. So the pressure is still on. I felt sorry for Watkins because, you know, England didn't play well, and he didn't get a great deal of service at all. We had a half chance, you know, where the defender got across quite well. And, you know, personally, I would persevere with Watkins. But, you know, I do think, yes, I understand you're always going to have these injuries and people, you know, with one eye on what is going to be extremely hectic running for everyone in the Premier League and then the Champions League and Europa League for some teams. So, yes, you will have dropouts. We all knew that. I thought we actually might have even more dropouts than we have. But I do think that, you know, Southgate will learn about players who are contenders rather than certainties for the squad.
John, just looking more in depth at Tuesday's game against Belgium, and Andy's mentioned it there about Ollie Watkins, and Ollie Watkins is someone you've mentioned as well this morning. But again, the expectation is that it'll be Ivan Toney's turn to lead the line against Belgium. And that would be some turnaround, isn't it, for the player from, you know, obviously had that ban for betting. Came back from that in January. He's back in the England squad at the first attempt. He's done okay for Brentford since he's come back in, but he's clearly someone that Gareth Southgate likes the look of for this England squad. I mean, how big an opportunity is this for him to cap it? As Andy said there, you know, it's him versus Ollie Watkins for that other space to be the backup to Harry Kane in Germany this summer. And this is a big chance, you know, probably one of the best auditions that he's going to get for the opportunity to put his name on that plane come the summer.
Yeah, it was interesting, really, to you know, speak to Southgate after the game Saturday night and just sort of, you know, it was trying to throw it forward a little bit to sort of kind of Tuesday and say, you know, what might be. And Toney was an immediate thought because, you know, Watkins has had his chance. And I have to say, like Andy, I think Watkins has had a brilliant season, you know. And basically, if you were sort of kind of talking about your top six for football of the year, you know, I actually think Watkins is in that conversation. But it doesn't necessarily mean that he sort of kind of particularly thrives at international level. And you know, it was a bit frustrating again for him. You know, he works so hard and it's the sort of centrepiece for Villa. And, you know, it just didn't happen for him on Saturday. And Southgate was sort of saying about Toney, you know, he knows the score, but that's him. You know, he will be comfortable with that. And, you know, he was saying, yes, he does have a confidence. I think I'd put arrogance to him, but he basically said, no, you know, all strikers need that kind of confidence and self-belief, and he's got it, you know, and he knows the score, basically. And I guess that's what he likes about Toney, that mentality, that self-belief, that ability from the penalty spot should it come for a shootout. You know, it's those little defining edges. But I've got to say that Toney's a great story because of his comeback after the 8-month ban. But guys, how do we think he's done? I personally think it hasn't happened for him. He started brilliantly, you know, since his return, and everyone gets swept along for the brilliant praise and Ivan Toney's this and he's a, you know, Champions League player. But I think Arsenal's interest has cooled a little bit because of the price, you know? And basically, Brentford are sort of, you know, if they're asking 80 million, good luck with that one, you know, because he's just not, you know, and then also he's, you know, is he that killer in the penalty box? Absence make the heart grow fonder, doesn't it? You're a better player sometimes when you're out. And my God, he became an absolute striking god, frankly, during his 8 months. And, you know, he's a really good Premier League striker. And frankly, if you're asking me, I'd put him on the plane to the Euros. I probably would, just because of that mentality. And let's be honest here, if fit, Harry Kane will play every single minute, and he better add, because we need him, you know. And Saturday showed that, frankly. But the reality is then that basically Toney, if you're chasing a game in extra time, if you're after a penalty, he offers you something a little bit different. And that's where I think then that squad system comes into play, and where I think Toney could kind of still get on the plane. But I do think, you know, that we've built Toney into something a little bit that he's not. He probably moved this summer and he'll probably go to a good club, but will he go to a club that's going to win the title? I'm not so sure.
And they just wanted to bring you in there as well on Ivan Toney. You seem to agree a lot with what John was saying there, that, yeah, I think we're all in agreement. It's not been great since he's been back.
No, he hasn't. Listen, a good Premier League player, I think the idea that someone, you know, when he's only got, is a year left, John, on his contract after this? It is, yeah. The idea that someone's going to pay £100 million for him is absolutely, I mean, it's pie in the sky. It's not going to happen, particularly as he hasn't said the Premier League light since he come back. He had such a long absence, you know, he was good beforehand. I agreed with everything that John says. What I'm intrigued about as well is here's the thing, I think. Here's the thing. I'll throw it back to Crossy. If, for example, I mean, you know, heaven forbid, if Harry Kane, say, it's a big game at the Euros, say it's a quarterfinal, and Harry Kane is unavailable through injury, and you've got, let's just say now you've actually got Watkins and Tony. I mean, just hypothetically, you know, you'll probably only have one, we know that. But say you have both. Do they play in that game when Harry Kane's not available in the quarterfinal of a Euros? Here's what I'm saying. Don't rule out the idea that if Harry Kane is unavailable, he plays neither of those. I genuinely think, and that could come in, and then so how does he play then? And will he experiment with this on Tuesday? Obviously, he just had a straightforward on Saturday night. I kept saying Friday night before, but obviously it was Saturday night, that game against Brazil. It was that memorable. I forgot what day it was. But seriously, I mean, will he experiment? So if he doesn't think that Watkins or Tony can actually not even closer to doing the job that Kane does he have an alternative one? Does he play Rashford through the middle? Does he have a false nine? Someone suggested the other day that Jude Bellingham could play false nine. You know, and considering his goal scoring record at club level this season, be an interesting call. Be a very interesting call. I just think that he has so many reservations, maybe, about Tony and about Watkins, that he might actually look for an alternative to both of them.
I'd love to see Phil Foden in that false nine if we're going to have a conversation. Oh, can you imagine? I mean, it does slightly hurt with me. I do see the kind of the stats. You know, someone was sort of saying how didn't have any sort of touch in the opposition box, Phil Foden. Like, hang on a minute. Did you watch the game? The game is slightly, you know, dictated by circumstance. And, you know, you've got to get the ball in the box for him to have the touch. You know, come on. You know, watch the game. What's the pattern of the game? It's bonkers. They were kept at arm's length and didn't play particularly well. But I do think that Foden, just look at Southgate's record with Foden, picked him every single time he's available. And basically, did he start on the right? He might have done, but he certainly didn't play on the right. Watch the game. You know, basically, he was much more central than Gordon, for example. He just kept continually drifting inside. And basically, you know, that's sort of an issue with Foden. But Foden should be our crown jewel, you know, as part of the attacking trio. And then basically just get the best out of him. But frankly, you know, so I'd consider that. But I tell you what, it's interesting that basically as it stands, even though I'm struggling with Watkins a little bit, his work rate gets the edge over Tony. So I do still think that Tony's got work to do. You know, I think he's probably, you can just tell the way the manager speaks about a player that he thinks that Tony's ahead in the queue. But I'd still feel that Watkins, even though he hasn't, you know, copied his or emulated his Villa form for England, still, in my view, I still think he's ahead, you know, even though he's clearly got a little bit of work to do. So Tony's got to seize this chance. It's a massive one for Tony, you know, but I just have an inkling that Southgate picked him, whatever.
It's interesting, John, isn't it? When you speak to both these characters at St. George's Park or when we do, you know, media days that involve them, I mean, it is extremely interesting how different Watkins and Tony are as characters. I mean, and that, honestly, that can, you know, that can influence, can sway a decision a lot. You know, Ollie Watkins is extremely reserved, isn't he? You know, very reserved, very, he's humble. He doesn't pursue the limelight. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't look for the headlines. He doesn't, you know, he admits himself, you know, he gets embarrassed when he gets asked for pictures in the supermarkets. He's very much under radar. Tony is not a shy lad, is he? I mean, let's face it, you know, he is not backward or coming forward. And that's not a criticism. That's the way he is. He's ultra confident. You know, he did an interview the other day, didn't he? I think, I'm not sure what challenge for him. I've even been for his club channel saying, you know, Brentford sell me and I go to Real Madrid and stuff like, you know, I mean, he's got that confidence, that bullishness, that he likes it out there. He likes being the big name. Whereas Watkins is extremely different. And then you just wonder how much store you put in that, what, you know, which sort of character you might think, you know, again, I totally agree with John. You just might think, you know what, that character who basically is full of himself might be the one that you need in that sort of environment and that sort of situation.
Yeah, and with England's track record of penalties as well, having someone of Ivan Toney's calibre wouldn't be the worst thing either. I mean, I'm not saying Ollie Watkins is a bad penalty taker, but... just finally, chaps, before we go this morning, just wanted to get your thoughts on the idea again, you know, for England that, yes, you know, kind of similar to the opening question, really, that, yes, it's a friendly, yes, it doesn't really matter much, but at least going towards the summer so that there is this kind of positivity somewhat around the England team that, you know, it's a win that they get against Belgium and also a good performance as well to kind of make up for that, you know, rather damn screw on a Saturday night against Brazil. John, for you first, the importance for England of this game, you know, to get a winner and a good performance as well.
Yeah, because it sets the public mood, honestly. I was staggered by the negativity on Saturday night and then Sunday. Honestly, you know. Oh, it really does. I know Andy's laughing because basically he'll put me in the Gareth Southgate fan club. And look, I get the fact that his record against the big nations isn't what it was. But hang on, 2016 we were hopeless. 2014 we were home before the postcards. Gareth Southgate has completely and utterly transformed the England team. To people that go on about, and yes, he's been blessed with better players now. Absolutely, he has. But, you know, we're fooling ourselves if we think that basically we've got, you know, a World 11 from start to finish. We haven't, you know, we've got one, we'll have one of the best squads at the Euros, make no mistake about that. We've got the Everton goalkeeper, we've got Aaron Maguire, everyone, you know, frankly slags off every week when it suits them. And, you know, we've got, you know, Jordan Henderson, who's gone to Saudi Arabia and is now, you know, it's the worst Ajax team anyone can ever remember. And it's just like, you know, come on. So we're saying they're hopeless on the one hand, but Southgate's rubbish as well because he can't, you know, sort of motivate this useless band. I mean, come on, make your mind up. And it's just really annoyed me about the sort of the negativity because it makes you want to hide into nothing when actually I think Southgate is a really good football manager who's brought out the best. I think he would be on, you know, and listen, Man United, as we know, Man United have got him right at the top of their wish list. And then you have proper club legends last week saying that they'd quite like Southgate as their manager. You know, the timings probably don't align for him to be United manager, but that doesn't stop United admiring the guy because he's quality, you know. And then, but it just, you need to reset that people's memories a little bit with a win, I think, against Belgium to stop that kind of overwhelming negativity for the next kind of 3 months building into Euros going, oh, England, the rubbish have got absolutely no chance. When, you know, that is so unfair and ridiculous because I do think England will go as one of the, not the absolute favourites, but I think they'll go believing that they've got a chance as one of the four, along with France, Portugal and, you know, dare I say it, Germany, you know, sort of thing. And that's, you know, I think that's a reality now. But I do think that win and that positivity is so important. It is at the heart of the campaign and the build up to it.
And Andy, for you as well, just to put it into context for anyone listening, that Belgium didn't exactly have the best results of the weekend themselves as well. John O'Shea's first game in interim charge of Ireland, and they still couldn't find a way past. I think only two shots on target, despite having the majority of possession as well. Not, you know, it's not the best Belgian side. It's not the great sides that we saw in recent years. You know, they're probably on the way down from that golden generation now. But still a stern test for England, but the expectation probably lies with them needing to win it.
Yeah, yeah. No, but I agree with everything that John said about the need for a win. In particular, I mean, first of all, Belgium, they'll play a different team tonight, Belgium, than the one that faced Republic of Ireland. Obviously, they're missing some key players, and Belgian players are in the same situation as English players. They play in Europe's top leagues, including the Premier League, and they have big, big, big finales to the season to consider, you know, when they're deciding whether or not to put in 100%. So, yes, again, don't read too much into it. However, a win, I think, is really crucial for all the factors that John's mentioned, including, I just think as well, I just think it would give Gareth Southgate a big boost. I got the impression last week, you know, he's been in the job a long time, you know, he must take its toll now. And then he comes to this, what he thinks is a vital international break, and it's dominated by arguments about flags and about a story about him possibly going to Manchester United. And you could get it, you've got the feeling he was quite exasperated, really, already. And we haven't even got to the Euros yet. And I just think it would give him a lift if they had a rousing night at Wembley, you know, that we didn't have paper planes coming down after like, you know, 50 minutes and the people weren't heading for the tubes, like, you know, 10 minutes from the end. Basically, the people weren't bored as they were on Saturday night to a certain extent. It would be great, wouldn't it, to have a rousing finale. It's not send-off, is it? I think they've got two more games in June, one of them at St. James Park, though, obviously. And I just think it'd be good for Southgate spirits, and if nothing else, to have a rousing night, you know, a good game against Belgium, a lively game, few goals in the game, come out on top. I just think it'd give him a lift. I think he already needs a lift, and we haven't even started again, because I think it's going to be a long, long summer for Gareth Southgate for a variety of reasons, and we've already had a taste of it now. So a big boost for everyone, but a big boost for him in particular. And as John quite rightly says, he must, I know he says he blanked himself out, but he must listen to the stuff, you know, in the aftermath of Saturday's game and thing like, you know, goodness sake, we just, you know, Brazil just nicked the win. Okay, they're probably best, but so he needs a lift, I think, already, and hopefully he'll get it on Tuesday night.
John, Andy, really appreciate your time. As always, of course, you can keep up to date with all the latest from the England camp ahead of their game against Belgium and all the reaction to follow from that across the Daily Mirror, Daily Star and Daily Express websites. And as well, not to forget the fact that we are heading towards Premier League weekend, the return of the Premier League this week as well. So look out for extra time on Thursday as we preview, especially Arsenal against Man City. What a huge game that's going to be in the title hunt. But for now, it's goodbye.